Hello, listeners. This is Carolyn Yeager bringing you the seventh installment of my reading of the Wehrmacht War Crimes Bureau, 1939 to 1945. It's a book written by Alfred de Zayas from the surviving files of this bureau. We're now in the second half of the book, part two, and we begin with chapter 13, Poland. The War Crimes Bureau was set up on 4th September 1939 in response to the proliferation of reports of grave violations of the laws of war allegedly committed by members of the Polish armed forces. The Bureau's first assignment and the first specific cases described here consisted in verifying these allegations of abuses against both German soldiers and German civilian minorities throughout Poland, primarily, though, in former German provinces, Posen and West Prussia, which were ceded to Poland in the Treaty of Versailles. I want to comment here that this was the cause of World War II, not Adolf Hitler's National Socialist policies, but this, the forcing of almost 1 million German people in German provinces that had always been German provinces to become a part of the new Polish state. And it also forced a large number of Germans from other German provinces to become a part of the newly created state of Czechoslovakia. Now, these Germans voted to remain with Germany, but the much trumpeted policy of self-determination that was going around at that time for all of these small nations did not apply to the Germans. The victor's purpose was to weaken Germany and strengthen her enemies, particularly her close neighbors. So that is the background of why the invasion of Poland eventually took place. Zayas then adds this line: readers should bear in mind throughout the following chapters that these investigations reflect the German viewpoint and that the Allied position must still be considered in the light of whatever new evidence may become available. Now, my comment there, that's totally unnecessary, but he follows the Nuremberg version of history, which I've already pointed out, which says that Nazi Germany was the aggressor and started World War II with the invasion of Poland. So he has to point out, or he has to lead the reader to think that there might be more to this than what we so far know, that even though these investigations reflected what would happen to the Germans at the hands of the Poles, there might be something to bring some of this into doubt or to explain some of it away. That's what he's saying there. Going back to the Nuremberg version of history, the invasion of Poland is seen as a war crime in itself. So the real reasons for Hitler to invade Poland in September 1939 are completely ignored or are denigrated in this, in what de Zayas has written here. And at the same time, he gives the benefit of the doubt to the Poles as to the crimes that they were committing, that they may have had good reasons, or he gives a lot of excuses. He has a lot of excuses to make for the Poles, which I'll point out when we get to that. So the first section of this chapter is headed Early Investigations. Since the German army judges had to continue advancing with their respective divisions, the Bureau did not at first turn to them for assistance, but instead sent several resident members on special assignment to various regions in Poland. Navy Judge Ulrich Schottenberg left Berlin on 7th September 1939, together with Inspector Dirks, and from 9 to 13th September, they took numerous depositions at Bromberg and the nearby village of Hohensalza. Upon returning to Berlin, Schottenberg turned over the depositions and other collected evidence in a file entitled Bromberg I, which also included numerous protocols, photographs, and press reports. He summed up as follows, and this is Judge Schottenberg's summary, quote, "I took sworn depositions of over 40 ethnic Germans. Each witness gave testimony about the murder of at least two or three relatives. In a number of cases, entire families were liquidated. During house raids, the soldiers and the mob first stole all money and valuables and then plundered and devastated the homes. The men, regardless of age, from 13 or even 10-year-old boys to old men of 70 and 80, were in nearly all cases brutally killed. Only in a few cases did the murderers merely shoot their victims. Most were beaten with crowbars, rifle butts, clubs, or stabbed so that their faces were deformed beyond recognition. I even saw the partially burned corpses of murdered ethnic Germans. Many Germans had to watch the murder of their fathers, brothers, or children without being allowed to relieve their pain if they did not die immediately. While this was going on, they were even insulted and jeered at by the soldiers and the mob. In other cases, they were forced to witness the murder of their relatives before becoming themselves victims or beaten or shot to death. Unquote. The testimony of 12 September 1939 of the widow Johanna Giese is representative of the hundreds of protocols in the Bureau's files. The thing I want to point out is that this chapter has only a few examples of what was done to the ethnic Germans, civilians, and in some cases I think there's some instances to soldiers. Only a few, and there's hundreds and many, many hundreds in each file. So we don't get the full impact of it at all. These were not just isolated instances. But Johanna Giese testified under oath that, quote, on Sunday, 3rd September 1939, between 11 and 12 in the morning, we were in the cellar of our house. Polish soldiers and civilians entered our lot. They ordered us to come out of the cellar. After we came out, one of the soldiers claimed that someone had been shooting out of our house. But we didn't have any weapons at all in the house. My son-in-law was the first to leave the cellar. At that moment, a Polish civilian shouted that all Germans had to be shot. My son-in-law was immediately shot by one of the soldiers. The bullet severed the jugular. He received three more bullet wounds in the chest and throat. My son Reinhard Giese had also been with us in the cellar. He was 19 years old. When he saw that my son-in-law had been shot, he tried to flee. He succeeded in jumping over the fence into our neighbor's lot, but they pursued him and shot him. In the evening, I was able to recover the corpse. He had been shot in the chest. Unquote. Air Force Judge Alphonse Waltzog, another resident member of the Wehrmacht Legal Department, interrogated other witnesses in Bromberg between 8 and 16 September and also visited some of the sites involved. For instance, after a witness named Kurt Kaliska described the deliberate burning of the Lutheran church at Bromberg Schwedenboe on 4th September 1939, Waltzog and his clerk Hanschke went to see for themselves. Quote, the church, a red brick building, and the vicarage were totally destroyed by fire, he reported. Only the ruins of the outside walls have remained. The church was entirely plundered. One steps over the debris and bent rods. Altar and baptismal fountain have been demolished. Under the belfry on top of the debris are also the broken bell and the clockwork. Still on the tower is the clock dial, the hands marking 1745 hours, unquote. It should be noted that the Poles were almost 100% Catholic and very partisan to their Catholicism, and they hated Lutheranism, and they hated the German Lutheran, and really did believe that they were hated by God, so that anything they did to them had the blessing of God, and they learned that from their priests in their churches. Continuing, Vera Gannot, or G-A-N-N-O-T, testified on 14 September 1939 about her family's experience. On Sunday afternoon, 3rd September, around 2, Polish soldiers and civilians approached our house. The Polish civilians said, Germans live here. Then the soldiers started shooting. My father was the first to be forced out. The Poles asked him where he had his machine gun. My father did not understand the question, since he could not speak Polish. I went out to help my father, since I speak Polish. I asked the Poles what we had done to them and pleaded for my father. But the Poles yelled back, "Down with the German swine!" My father received several rifle butt blows to his face and on his body. He was then stabbed with a knife. He fell to the floor and was shot 6 times. The soldiers moved on after telling the civilians they could plunder the house or set it on fire. After a while, another horde of soldiers and civilians arrived. The Poles tore my clothes off and forced me naked onto the floor. Some 10 men held me down. One of the Poles consummated the rape. Unquote. Another military judge, Joachim Schultz, was sent to Upper Silesia and Krakow to investigate reports of the murder of German prisoners of war by Polish soldiers. On 17 September, he took the deposition of former POW Kurt Lemser at the Krakow Military Hospital. Lemser said under oath, "On 9 September 1939, our music corps of 31 men marched from the front towards Sagan, since the bus in which we had been traveling could not keep up with the fast advance of the troops. At the entrance to a town, which I believe is called Stopnica, we suddenly saw Polish soldiers. The Poles were at first surprised and then fired at us with rifles and a kind of anti-tank gun. Later we were joined to a group of 16 German prisoners and taken to a churchyard. 7 or 8 men had to step out and stand with their faces to the church wall. Suddenly, German artillery hit the town. Thus we had to turn around and march next to the Poles. After we had marched for about an hour, an escort of 50 to 60 men directed us down the roadside ditch to a hay-covered barn. There we had to stand in 2 rows. The Poles who had been ahead of us moved behind us, and we heard them load their rifles. We knew that our last moment had arrived, and shortly thereafter they started firing at us. I and other comrades managed to run away in the twilight. The Poles fired madly with rifles and machine guns after us, who were fleeing, and at our comrades standing by the barn. Only 12 of the 45 or 46 prisoners survived." Unquote. In order to confirm Lemser's allegations, Judge Schultz took the depositions of 4 other survivors at the Krakow Hospital for the Bureau's files in Berlin. As the news of such abuses were published and magnified by the German press, he would say magnified, that's desires. Marcel Junot of the International Committee of the Red Cross asked for a conference with Rudolf Lehmann, requesting documentary evidence from Bromberg, Upper Silesia, and Galicia. On 27 September 1939, Lehmann made an extensive report to the German Foreign Office on his conversation with Junot and asked that copies of the files, Bromberg 1, including the Schottenberg report and Bless and Stopnica files, be forwarded to Junot. Lehmann summed up these investigations as follows. Quote, "The climax of the Polish murders was reached on 3 September 1939 between 10 or 11 in the morning and 3 in the afternoon. Official excuse for the slaughter of the German population was the accusation mentioned by almost all witnesses, the accusation made by the Polish soldiers and civilians that shots had been fired out of the houses of the ethnic Germans or that guns and munitions were hidden there, making a search of the house imperative. Under this pretext, the Polish soldiers and their helpers entered the homes of the Germans, where they could best liquidate their victims. In every case, without exception, where this pretext was used, the witnesses swore that it was completely unfounded, that is, that they had weapons, was completely unfounded, and that it was raised by the Poles only to give their brutal actions against the Germans a certain appearance of legality." Unquote. That was Rudolf Lehmann, his summary. So, the Germans weren't firing, they were scared, they were hiding in their houses. So this was totally a pretext that was used. The next section is headed Further Investigations, September and October 1939. In view of the great number of reports reaching Berlin every day, Judges Schottenberg, Waltzog, and Schultz were soon sent back to Poland. Maximilian Wagner, head of the International Law Branch of the Wehrmacht Legal Department, also empowered them to call upon the local military courts for assistance. On 20th September 1939, he issued the following documents to Waltzog, that is, Wagner did. Quote, with reference to the Army Decree of 4 September 1939, you are entrusted with the most thorough investigation possible of the crimes committed by Polish irregulars in and around Bromberg. You are empowered to call upon the military courts there for assistance in taking sworn deposition of witnesses and experts and for the evaluation of other documentary evidence, unquote. And on 21st September, he said, quote, the responsibility for the judicial investigation remains in your hands. The local military courts may carry out investigations only in exceptional cases and upon your petition and to the extent you consider appropriate so as to avoid duplication of witnesses and expert depositions, unquote. You see that Desaias is more interested, and he may have good reason, he's more interested in showing how the Wehrmacht War Crimes Bureau functioned than he is in relaying atrocities that were taking place. So to go on, he says, in the following weeks, the War Crimes Bureau called upon many military judges stationed in Berlin and recruited judges from other commands as well. As early as 15 September 1939, the Bureau had turned for assistance to the military court at Prague, which sent to Berlin three judges, Hans Bettischer, Georg Hurtig, and Horst Rager, who were immediately sent off on assignment. Their first report, dated 29 September 1939, describes their work in the province of Posen between 18 and 28 September. Quote, witness depositions were not limited to ethnic Germans, but also extended to Polish persons. Polish soldiers, especially the infantry, were much involved in the murders. In the majority of cases, the victims were first arrested under some pretext, most often following German air attacks. The following are the most common grounds for the arrests, when grounds were at all given: that they are alleged possession of weapons, ammunition, and the secret transmitters, giving light signals to German planes, espionage, and giving shelter to spies. But in many cases it sufficed for the arrest if the victim affirmatively answered the question whether he was German and of the Lutheran faith. From the entire province of Posen, the ethnic Germans, who had evidently been arrested according to a special list, were driven toward Kutno. During the march, continuous abuses were committed by the military escort, primarily against those who, because of weakness or advanced age or disease, could not walk fast enough. And that's the end of that. You know, this is interesting in that we see that those things which these people did, what these people did is what later they accused the Germans of doing. They mistreated people on these marches, and then later when the Germans marched people, the Jews and Poles accused the Germans of abusing them as they were marching, when usually that was not the case. That was not the case at all. So continuing, in addition to the victims of these deportations, there were killings of ethnic Germans in other parts of the province, especially in the eastern and southern districts, where some extraordinarily brutal murders were committed. Entire families were liquidated. The men were not always merely shot, but frequently slaughtered with all sorts of tools before the eyes of their relatives, who had also been advised of their impending death. Many of the corpses were discovered with severe mutilations. At Tarlova near Kolo, Polish soldiers hunted down with machine guns a large number of Germans. Witnesses reported finding some 130 corpses strewn about on the field like hares after the hunt. In three cases, it could be established that the Polish army did not treat members of the Luftwaffe who had jumped out of their stricken planes as prisoners of war, but shot them instead. Only some of the witnesses have been interrogated thus far, because many who had particularly gruesome experiences are still physically and psychically so shaken that taking depositions did not appear advisable. Unquote. And that was the rest of this report from Posen. It was all one report. The report of the three judges was supported by the sworn testimony of many witnesses, such as that of Olga Teska from Gross Neudorf before Judge Betticher. On Wednesday, 6 September 1939, says Olga, I was on the property of my uncle, Karl Hackbarth, in Gross Neudorf. My brother, Albert Teska, was there too. Around 1:30 p.m., five Polish soldiers arrived and started searching for weapons and ammunition, alleging that someone had fired from the house. There were, of course, none there. Lying in bed, they found the farmer, Eric Busa, from Gross Neudorf, who had already been shot in the lung by Polish railroad workers and who had sought refuge at the Hackbarth house. They ordered him to dress and come out. While he was dressing, the soldiers went into the room of the widow, Lutke, who lived in the same house, together with her daughter. They demanded to see Miss Lutke's husband and did not accept the fact that she was unmarried. Since they did not find her husband, they asked my brother, Albert Teska, to come out. Then they left with Busa and my brother, Albert. Busa was the old man with the bullet wound in his lung, and stated they were taking them for interrogation. Both were later found dead some 12 kilometers away. Unquote. After the occupation of the town of Hohensalza by German troops, businessman Otto Hoffmann was commissioned by the magistrate to look for the places in which ethnic Germans had been murdered and buried. By the time of his deposition before Judge Hurtig on 22nd September, he had found three mass graves containing a total of 35 corpses. Since new witnesses were constantly being located, the War Crimes Bureau commissioned Betcher, Hurtig, and Rager to undertake further investigations in Poland. These were all judges. This time they traveled separately, and from 2 to 17 October took witness depositions at Thorn, Strzałowo, Alt-Bogen, and Cierczosinek. On his way to Poland at the University Clinic in Breslau, Judge Rager interrogated a wounded German civilian, Karl Schmidt, who testified as follows. Quote, on Tuesday, 3rd September 1939, Polish troops, and these were infantrymen, retreating from the west, came through our village of New Tecklenburg and took me and 14 other ethnic Germans out of our houses and led us away. We were 6 men and 9 women. Among them were my wife, Herta Schmidt, née Grauwunder, my mother-in-law, Wilhelmine Grauwunder, née Becca, my brother-in-law, Paul Grauwunder, and my sister-in-law, Elsa Grauwunder. On our way, we were threatened with rifle butts if we did not walk fast enough. Some 2 kilometers away from the village, we had to stand facing a water ditch. After they had taken our money and watches, they started firing at us from behind at a distance of 20 to 30 meters. I stood at the furthermost left and was therefore the last one to be shot. The bullet struck me on the right side of my chest. I did not lose consciousness but let myself fall into the ditch. All those who were not already in the water were thrown in. Most were crying out terribly. Once again the Poles shot at them. My brother-in-law was thrown on top of me, but I managed to keep my head above water. The Poles then left. About half an hour later, I risked crawling out of the ditch. All was quiet, and no one gave a sign of life. Only 2 dogs howled that had also been shot. Unquote. It is important to repeat that the military judges made a point of hearing not only Germans, but as many Poles as possible. On 14 October 1939, Judge Betcher took the sworn testimony of Boleslaw Kasprzyk, and he said, quote, on Monday, 4 September 1939, I was with the 63-year-old Richard Gerth. Around 9 in the morning, a Polish soldier came on the lot. His bicycle was broken, and I had to help him repair it. When he was finished, he demanded that the old man Gerth give him food, drink, and tobacco. I told him that everything was already gone. Then he yelled, enough! Put your hands up! I could get away and run for the door. At this time, I heard the first shot and then the second. Then I saw that the soldier sat on his bicycle and rode away. I saw Gerth lying dead on the floor. Unquote. Judge Zornig, assigned to the area of Langenau and Altlotenau, interrogated Arnold Schallhorn on 1st November. He said, quote, the village of Langenau had some 135 ethnic Germans. From 3rd to 6th September 1939, 23 of them were murdered, primarily by Polish soldiers. And there follows a list of names of men, women, and children aged 6 to 75. Those were the 23 who were murdered. Most of the barns were destroyed by arson. Furthermore, the Poles plundered all valuables and destroyed what they could not carry with them. Investigations in the Lodz district were assigned to Judges Schottenberg, Wolfgang Zierner, and Wilken von Ramdor. Their interrogations covered not only wartime abuses, but also a series of events in the summer of 1939. Get this now, the summer of 1939. Among the cases of arrest and maltreatment of Germans investigated by Judge von Ramdor from 7th to 27th October 1939 was the testimony of Erna Brodel, from the village of Pabianica. Her testimony is, on 5th August 1939, get this now, 5th August 1939, before any invasion, my brother Ugo drove to Sieradz to pick up two friends who were staying at the home of a common acquaintance. On the way back, on 7 August 1939, they were stopped and searched by a Polish major. They were sent to the jail of Wydawa. I drove to Wydawa with the mother of one of the two friends who had been arrested, and we learned there that the three had been transferred to the jail at Sieradz. This was on 11 August 1939. On 26 August, we received a letter from the Sieradz jail informing us that my brother had hanged himself. When we arrived at Sieradz in order to be present at the funeral, we were told that my brother had already been buried on 25th August. It wasn't until 6 October 1939 that I could have the body of my brother transferred here. And that, of course, was after the Germans were in control. The condition in which my brother's body was found in the jail's coffin clearly showed that he had not hanged himself, but rather that he had been beaten to death by the Poles. It goes on, this is not part of her testimony. Julius Brodel, the victim's father, described the condition of the body. Quote, the feet were tied with a thin cord. The body lay on wood shavings. The shavings under the head and under the back were impregnated with blood. It is out of the question that my son would have taken his own life. The lawyer who visited him 2 days before his death has told us that my son was in good spirits because he expected to be released soon. Judge Zierner also investigated another apparent murder that occurred shortly before the outbreak of the war. On 12th October 1939, von der Quast stated under oath, in the night of 31st August 1939, around 10:30, our windows were smashed by Poles. The fragments of the glass panes flew in the room and hit us in the back. My mother jumped out the side window. Erwin Jungling ran out the door and into the fields. We all hid ourselves. At 6 a.m., Mrs. Steinberg from the neighboring house came and informed us that the brother-in-law, that was Ernst Jungling, lay murdered in the field. We then went to the place. He was lying on the side, his head on one arm, unquote. Corroborating testimony came from a second witness, Wenzel Rutke. He said, quote, in the night of 31st August 1939, my windows, like the windows of all the Germans in the area, were smashed. The perpetrators were members of the Polish Reserve, who had to go into active duty. I am a neighbor of the Quas, with whom Erwin Jungling was staying. Jungling fled into the night and was killed by the Poles. I saw the corpse the next morning, unquote. On 21st October 1939, Alex Busse testified before Judge Zerner. Quote, in the last months before the war, the Western Association of the Poles incited them against us ethnic Germans. The consequences of this agitation were burnings and many killings in the district. Even before the war, German farmsteads were set afire by the Poles at night. And he's talking about in the last months before the war, that summer. Such examples establish that there had been persecution of the ethnic Germans before the war, but the War Crimes Bureau files do not establish large-scale killings before September of 1939. Thus, they contradict Nazi propaganda of the, quote, Great Terror, unquote, which was used by Goebbels and the Volkischer Beobachter to justify Germany's invasion of Poland. Still, Polish propaganda tried to justify Polish actions against the ethnic Germans as punishment for the traitorous activities of a fifth column. Hence, part of the task of the Bureau was to ascertain to what extent Germans in Poland had engaged in espionage or other activities detrimental to the security of the Polish state. Among the witnesses questioned in this regard by Air Force Judge Wilhelm Bokisch was the Polish Sergeant Pelicki from Bromberg, who described how a shooting incident that began on 3rd September 1939 in the northern part of Bromberg aroused nervousness in the Polish barracks because rumors went around that German parachutists had landed. The soldiers then went to town and arrested a number of ethnic Germans. Kalicki asked the guards whether anybody had actually seen any Germans shooting, but no one had. In the evening around 17:30, the battalion commander, Major Slawinski, called the other officers to a meeting, which I also attended. Major Slawinski made the following statement. Gentlemen, there is no evidence at all to establish Front Tireur or partisan activities on the part of the Germans. Get this idea out of your heads. He explained that not a single German use of arms could be established and that the shootings had been started by the retreating soldiers of the 9th and 27th Infantry Divisions. Lieutenant Kopczynski indicated that he and, quote, a number of other persons had searched the Lutheran cemetery, but the Lutherans, always the Lutherans, because it was rumored that the Germans had set up a machine gun there, but nothing at all could be found, unquote. Sergeant Tirakowski also declared that all reports of shootings on the part of the German population had proved to be unfounded. Whenever the relevant persons were questioned about the precise course of events, they could not give any such information. Unquote. The testimony of many German witnesses similarly rejects the Front Tireur theory, or the fifth column theory. In this connection, it is significant to note that after the collapse of the Polish government and the German military occupation of the western half of the country, no resident German was honored for anti-Polish Front Tireur activity. The next section is headed Evaluation of the Testimony. The dossiers prepared by individual judges and special commissions were systematically collected, evaluated, and compared by the staff of the War Crimes Bureau in Berlin. Because of the gravity and number of the crimes investigated, Rudolf Lehman conferred with the members of the Bureau on 30th September, 18th October, and again at the end of October 1939. But because reports of abuses continued to arrive in Berlin, depositions of witnesses were taken through the summer of 1940. Bureau members Martin Heinemann and Lothar Schöne were sent on special mission in November 1939 and January 1940 to military hospitals throughout the Reich, where ethnic Germans and Wehrmacht soldiers were still convalescing. Bureau Chief Johannes Golcha personally questioned those at military hospitals in the Berlin area, and since witnesses were spread throughout Germany in the occupied areas of Poland, the Bureau requested the assistance of more than 50 military courts as well. On 30th November 1939, for instance, Lieutenant Udo Rittgen gave a sworn statement before Judge Otto Mackel of the 21st Infantry Division. Rittgen, who had been wounded and taken prisoner during the Polish campaign, reported that he and other German POWs had been subjected to serious ill treatment by Polish soldiers, officers, and civilians. Some 20 local civilian courts were also requested by the Bureau to obtain the sworn deposition of witnesses residing within their jurisdictions. Thus, on 29 January 1940, the county court in Hirschberg took the deposition of Lieutenant Ernst Freiherr John von Freyen concerning his experience as a POW in Poland. He stated that although he was seriously wounded, he was first robbed by Polish soldiers, then forced to march. When he could no longer walk, he was stabbed twice with a bayonet in the area of his kidneys, and his nose was broken. On the basis of the material collected and evaluated by the War Crimes Bureau, 6 volumes of documents and commentary were assembled, each containing approximately 500 pages. So of these 6 documents, the first one is Polish Atrocities in Bromberg, Pless, and Stopnica. The second one, Polish Atrocities Committed Against Ethnic Germans and Prisoners of War in the Province of Poznan. Volumes 3 and 4, Violations of the Laws of War by the Polish Army. Volume 5, The Massacre of Ethnic Germans in Lodz. Volume 6, Polish Murders of Ethnic Germans, an Addendum. In the available records of the Bureau, there is no statistical study establishing the number of victims among members of German communities or German armed forces in Poland. And in parentheses, although it is probable that such a computation was at least attempted. End of parentheses. Hence, there are widely diverging estimates. The most heated debate concerns the number of ethnic Germans killed or missing. For instance, the Polish West Institute, Instytut Zachodni in Posen, published in 1959 a study by Karol Pospieszalski, now that's a Polish man, titled The Case of the 58,000 Volksdeutsche, which estimates some 2,000 ethnic German victims of excesses by Polish civilians and soldiers. So naturally they bring the number down as far as they figure anybody would possibly believe they were serious about it. Pospieszalski explains that the rapid advances of the German army in Poland were perceived by the Polish population as the result of fifth column activities on the part of the resident German minority, and the prevailing atmosphere of surprise, nervousness, fear, and bitterness, quote, undoubtedly led to heedless excesses against the local Germans, unquote. The noted Dutch historian Louis de Jong suggests that of, quote, the 750,000 to 1 million ethnic Germans in Poland, several thousand lost their lives in the wake of the panic over fifth column activities, unquote. He's, of course, on the side of the Poles. Lacking definitive figures, the Federal German Archives in Koblenz, that's an enemy too, the Federal German Archives in 1960s. But, I'll repeat, lacking definitive figures, the Federal German Archives in Koblenz commissioned in the 1960s a major project that involved the questioning of 6,106 persons and the collection and evaluation of 400 reports of eyewitnesses. This material establishes the murder of at least 3,841 named ethnic Germans. When it is considered that this result was obtained more than 20 years after the events, and that only witnesses residing in the Federal Republic of Germany could be located in question, it would appear that the actual number is probably well in excess of that figure. Well, I guess that's an understatement. It would be very much in excess of the figure of a little under 4,000. The records of the War Crimes Bureau dealing with this question comprise the depositions of 593 witnesses before 44 military and civilian judges. These refer to approximately 1,000 named victims and 3,500 to 5,000 additional unnamed victims among the ethnic Germans. Of course, it is no longer possible to determine to what extent the reports of killings overlapped. Nevertheless, since the records are incomplete, and since it is hardly possible that the German judges were able to locate and interrogate all surviving witnesses, the figure of 6,000 murdered ethnic Germans would appear a reasonable estimate. Well, now my comment is that, of course, they're always lowballing it. 6,000 is not a reasonable estimate from what we know of how these things go. And if you have almost 3,841, so I'm just going to round it out to 4,000, if you have 4,000 named ethnic Germans who are known and have, you know, have, people have given depositions on it who were killed, murdered by the Poles. If you have that, you would probably at least go 10 times that much to get to the real figure. That's the way it's usually done. So that would be 40,000, but I'll just half that. I'll just say let's put in a figure of about 20,000. I would think 20,000 would be a reasonable figure, although it's not something that's known and that you have evidence for like you do for these 4,000. The final section in this chapter on Poland is titled German Crimes in Poland. And this is where they're going to tell us that the Germans were also committing crimes against the Poles. And what you're going to notice is that while the Poles are giving excuses like the fifth column fear and so on, there's no excuses for the Germans at all. And in fact, the attitude toward the Germans is one that is tough in order to fit in with the Nuremberg narrative. So just keep that in mind. I have a difficult time reading this because I think it's very unfair, but I'm going to do it. So it goes like this. The German invasion of Poland with all its attending horrors and aberrations also provided ample evidence of the criminal plans of the Nazi regime in putting the racist Hedenvolk theories into practice. And he puts in parentheses, master race after Hedenvolk, which is not a good translation of that, but that's the popular way it's put forth as meaning master race. Germans never had any concept of the term master race. But going on, a grave dilemma emerged for many Germans, particularly for military judges who were expected to investigate enemy war crimes, while their own government was itself engaged in official criminality against Jews and non-Jews in Poland, both of whom were seen by the fanatical Nazis as Untermenschen. Many German judges were spared an early confrontation with the excesses of the Nazi state, but others did learn of some activities of the SS and SD. Alfons Waltzog, in the course of his investigations of Polish atrocities, also witnessed German crimes about which he felt compelled to report to his superior, Maximilian Wagner. He reported this, quote, "International law appears different in practice than in theory. At the high command of the Wehrmacht, we discussed the question of who had the authority to order the execution of hostages. Here, the SS special security units have executed hostages arbitrarily, Francs-tireurs, that is, partisans, that's who they're speaking about, partisans, without court-martial. It required considerable effort on the part of the judge competent for the occupied zone behind the lines to stop these killings. Today I learned from the current head of the local Gestapo that last night 20 Poles, so-called criminals, had been shot without trial. There are also 50 Poles in an internment camp here. They have been held for 8 days in a cellar, which I myself have visited. They too were supposed to be shot. Unquote. At about the same time, an SS stormtrooper and a police sergeant killed some 50 Polish Jews in the zone occupied by the German Third Army. The military court of the Kempf Armored Division initially charged the two with murder, and the prosecutor asked for the death penalty. The court, however, held on 13 September 1939 that the accused were guilty only of manslaughter. It sentenced the stormtrooper to 3 years imprisonment and the police sergeant to 9 years hard labor, recognizing as mitigating circumstances that, quote, because of the numerous atrocities committed by the Poles against the ethnic Germans, they were in a state of high irritability, unquote. Perhaps an explanation for this scandalously lenient sentencing may be found in the fact that the three-man court-martial was composed of a Wehrmacht judge and two SS jurors. A different case occurred in October 1939 in Polish Upper Silesia. There, General Otto von Knobelsdorff ordered an SD functionary arrested who claimed to have legal authority to execute 50 to 60 persons. The SD man alleged that according to intelligence information, the persons in question intended to carry out acts of sabotage against the German troops. Therefore, he claimed the authority to have them executed without legal proceedings. Knobelsdorff informed the man, General Knobelsdorff of the Wehrmacht, informed the man's SD superiors of his arrest and categorically rejected as a matter of principle any requests to have him released. This was looked upon as something good by Desaius. A sad example of unsuccessful opposition to Nazi abuses involves the fate of the Wehrmacht commander-in-chief at the Eastern Front, General Johannes Blaskowitz, who demanded in October 1939 that two SS colonels be court-martialed on charges of murder and plundering. When they were not, Blaskowitz sent two explicit protests to Hitler. In the second, dated 6 February 1940, Blaskowitz observed, "The attitude of the Wehrmacht troops to the SS and to the police alternates between disgust and hatred. Every soldier feels offended and repulsed by the crimes being committed in Poland by citizens of the Reich and representatives of the executive power. A soldier cannot understand how such crimes can remain unpunished, crimes that occur, in a sense, under the army's protection." Unquote. General Blaskowitz was replaced on 3 May 1940, and Nazi crimes in Poland did not abate. Auschwitz-Birkenau, Lublin-Majdanek, and other abominations were yet to follow. The full horror of Nazi exterminations in Poland would not be disclosed until the Nuremberg trials. Wow, what a paragraph. And that ends the chapter on Poland. The next chapter, 14, is on the Western Theater of War, and that's an interesting one. Plus, I think I'm going to do next time both the Western Theater of War and the chapter on Crete so that I can then keep up with an even amount of programs. So the next reading will be chapters 14 and 15. This has been Carolyn Yeager reading the Wehrmacht War Crimes Bureau 1939 to 1945, Chapter 13 on Polish War Crimes. This was posted on August 3rd, 2015. See you next time.